cases, John. In fact, I think it is about a related topic, but we'll see how it goes. So I want to start out with the statement that you can see on page 2 here, which is this statement, special relativity, or maybe relativity more generally, is not fundamentally about space-time. What it is about, I think, is about how different observers relate to each other, how we reconcile all of the different pictures that different observers see of the world, how we reconcile them together. And of course, space-time, which Minkowski invented shortly after the invention of special relativity, is a very useful device for doing that. It lets us a bunch of noise here. Can everybody hear me still?
Nope. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So, I'm not sure if I'm still...
We can hear you. Go ahead.
There, last time I did one of these, and it cut out for 20 minutes. Yeah, I think we should just dial in again. So, if you can hear me, I'll be right back.
We hear you.
Okay.
We can hear you.
We cannot hear anything. Is there anybody there?
Yeah, we can hear you. You're in Spain.
Okay, do you hear the speaker?
No, the speaker apparently cut off to reconnect. I'm trying to reach you on cell phone.
Thank you.
That was... This is...
I guess you've had plenty of time to think about this statement and decide whether you think it's true or not. But so space-time is one way to reconcile different observers' pictures, but it's not the only way. And in fact, there are other known ways. For example, there's the twister way of doing it and so on. But I want to talk about a different way today, which I'll start talking about on page 3. This is about doing holographic special relativity, by which I mean actually special relativity is formed into the De Sitter case, and then thinking about what special relativity looks like if we just encode observers on the boundary, on the conformal boundary of De Sitter space, rather than on space-time itself. And you might have several motivations for doing this. I guess the obvious motivation that comes to mind is that you might care about ADS-DST or DS-DST. And those things are about duality between field theories, which are really the more fundamental things, if ADS-DST has any truth to it. But if you're interested in those ideas, then you might be interested in, you know, what do other simpler theories of physics look like. For example, special relativity. For example, what do I look like if you project me onto the boundary of De Sitter space? Can I talk about complicated systems and not just duality between field theories? That said, that's not actually the reason that I got interested in thinking about this topic. The reason that I got interested was because I started talking to Julian Barber a couple of years ago and the other people who work on shape dynamics. And those guys say some really weird stuff, and I'm sure you've heard them say some weird stuff, and I think I can say that because they're all friends of mine. So maybe not everybody knows what shape dynamics is even, and I'm sorry, this is going to be a pretty poor introduction to shape dynamics even, but the idea is they take general relativity, doing a 3 plus 1 decomposition, but then do some rearrangements of fields in phase space and reinterpret it as a theory that is about spatial conformal geometry rather than space-time geometry. And I didn't understand how that works. I mean, I follow their arguments from the Hamiltonian analysis, but as far as what the geometric picture is, I just didn't get it. And so I was led in this direction partly by trying to come up with some geometric conceptual story for shape dynamics, and so some of the very basic things in shape dynamics, like what are observers supposed to be like, and what should I think of point particles in shape dynamics, and so on. So I started heading in that direction in order to sort out some geometric picture that I could come to terms with. And so I'll give, this will be my first attempt at trying to explain a conjecture of what I suspect is really going on in the shape dynamics approach to gravity. But this whole thing is also a part of the idea of observer space, which I've been developing over the last few years, mainly with Stefan Gehlen. And so let me explain about a bit about how that works on page 4. So Stefan and I designed observer space. We developed the theory of observer space geometries as a sort of universal kind of geometry for studying theories of space and time. And there's various things that we've done with it. We started out by using observer space geometry to study the relationship between covariant and canonical pictures of gravity. We've got some papers on that. The real paper that introduced observer space in its full glory was this paper under the second bullet point, which is really about how to do dynamical geometry just using observer space and not starting from a space-time perspective. So observer space is supposed to be the space of all observers. If we have a four-dimensional space-time, then the corresponding observer space is seven-dimensional. It's the unit future tangent bundle. But if we just suppose we don't have a space-time to start out, we've just got this abstract observer space, we have a way to write down field equations on this observer space that give us two things. They give us, first of all, space-time itself. We can reconstruct space-time as a quotient of observer space. And second, give us Einstein's equations on that reconstructed space-time. So I'm not going to talk too much about that. I talked about that last year in the ILQGS and in the CR paper there. But the point of it being a universal kind of geometry is that it's good for lots of other kinds of theories. For example, theories with preferred foliations. Steph and I both thought about that. Steph has a paper that relates observer space to Hojava-Lipschitz gravity and to Galilean observer spaces, even theories with a preferred foliation. Also, finsless spacetimes are an example of same kind of geometry, and Manuel Homan has written a very nice paper showing the correspondence. So basically, finsless space times from the perspective of observer space are just a different kind, differently curved, you could say, than Riemannian space times. And it includes things where there's no underlying space time at all in the style of relative locality. Today I'm going to talk about how to get observer space geometries from conformal geometry as well. So in order to define Hi, sir.
Hi, Derek.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have a general question to everyone. We have very bad quality here. Is that a general problem with other people, or is it just us?
Oh, here is very good, you can see.
Here is very good.
Boca is very good.
So I can hear Jorge very well, but nobody else very
okay.
well.
So it seems to be, okay, so it seems to be just the problem with us. Okay, thanks.
I don't know. I can't hear that well myself. But I'm doing most of the talking. So,
Bianca, we hear you very quiet. It's very hard for us to hear you.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead?
Shall I continue?
Yes.
Okay. So. There's a formal definition of observer space, and in order to give that definition, you have to know a bit about Cartan geometry. So if you turn to the next slide, Cartan geometry, most of you have heard me talk about this stuff before. The idea is that it's a combination of the two major revolutions of classical Euclidean geometry. One, Riemannian geometry, where you allow curvature, and two is Klein geometry, where you change the symmetry group, change the type of geometry. So this was defining how people thought of all of the different non-Euclidean geometries and using group theory. Cartan geometry is the common generalization of those, and that's about all you need to know about it right now, except that for any Klein geometry, any homogeneous space, there's a different type of differential geometry that you can do. And as physicists, we don't use most of those very often, but some of them are very useful in gravity. So, for example, one that's very useful in gravity is on page 6, sorry, turn to the next page. Homogeneous space, which is just a sphere space-time. Homogeneous space, which is a sphere space-time, serves as a model for a type of geometry that's behind the McDonnell-Mansuri formulation of gravity and related formulations. But the important point for observer space is that SO41 also acts transitively on observers. And remember, I'm just defining an observer to be a future-pointing unit time-like vector in space-time. The Sitter group acts transitively on those as well, and the group that stabilizes one of them is just the rotation group, SO3. And so we get as a homogeneous space that the observer space of the Sitter space-time is SO41 mod SO3. And so we can just define, this makes more sense if you know lots of Cartan geometry already. Love this definition. If you don't, it might be second in terms of Cartan geometry. And that's what I'm going to do for most of the rest of the talk until the end. So I'm going to go backwards in this theorem. I'll start out by telling you how to construct an observer space geometry, how to reconstruct the observer space of the Sitter space time, just starting from the conformal sphere. And then we'll talk about how to generalize and do Cartan geometry and maybe apply the shape dynamics.
I think to understand this theorem, because everybody knows what conformal geometry is, which I hope is the same as what you're using, which is basically a manifold equipped with a metric of the conformal factor. Is that what you mean?
That's right, yeah, conformal metric is
okay, so what is an n-dimensional observer geometry? You gave us some example, but what is the general definition? I got a manifold, and what else do I have?
Yeah, I gave you the general definition on the previous page. So it's a Cartan geometry modeled on that homogeneous space.
Yeah, that doesn't help us because it'll tell us what is Cartan geometry.
Right, that's true. I did it deliberately, so I can say quickly what a Cartan geometry is. It is a Cartan geometry modeled on the homogeneous space G mod H
is a connection to the group G with a symmetry breaking down to the group H, such that the G mod H part of the connection is non-degenerate. That's a thing that becomes like the Cochrane field in the case where you're talking about gravity. But I want to convince you that that's not the most important thing right now. I will talk a bit more about what Cartan geometries are like towards the end. And right now I want to focus on the Klein geometry side of the picture, because you have to understand the homogeneous space part of the picture before you can deform it and talk about Cartan geometry. And I will get back to this theorem at the end as well. So let me move on, if that's okay, to page 8. And yeah, so everything for a while will just be about homogeneous spaces, but I am eventually interested in dynamical geometries, of course. So I'm going to deform this using Cartan geometry. So fortunately, all of the homogeneous spaces that we need can be understood in terms of 4+1 dimensional Minkowski vector space, 4+1 dimensions. And in fact, all of these spaces inherit their action of the De Sitter group, SO41, from the way that they sit inside of R41. Not all of them are exactly subspaces, but they're at least subspaces or quotients of subspaces. So anyway, at the Sitter spacetime, I guess we all know how that works. The Sitter spacetime can be viewed as the unit space-like pseudosphere in R41. And similarly for hyperbolic space, it's the unit future time-like pseudosphere. So you can, it looks like a mass shell in R41. And then we have homogeneous spaces that correspond to the ambient light cones. The light cones in R41, future and past. So they're separate components, because I'm talking about the connected Lorentz group. I want to change my direction of time. I have to have a notion of future to talk about observers. And then the conformal free sphere is the projective light cone of R41. So that's a quotient space of a subspace. You take the subspace system of all light rays through the origin, and yeah, so a point in that space is one of those light rays. So all this stuff is known stuff. The thing that may be new is observer space. And this line about observer space, I want you to pay attention to. I probably should have dedicated a slide to making sure that it's that this line is understood. So the observer space of the Sitter spacetime is the unit future tangent bundle of the Sitter spacetime. And locally, that looks like the Sitter spacetime cross H3. So I have a velocity space H3 at each point. But it's much more natural, actually, to think of this as a subspace of the Sitter spacetime cross H4, because yeah, if you think about the ambient picture, imagine the hyperboloid sitting, the De Sitter hyperboloid sitting inside of R41. I take a future pointing time-like tangent vector at some point, and then I can translate that back to the origin of the ambient space, and it becomes a unit future-directed vector at the origin of that ambient space. In other words, it becomes a point in H4. So you can't get all points in the Sitter space-time cross hyperbolic space that way, but I get all of the ones, I get exactly the ones for those, that pair of points is orthogonal in the ambient metric. So this is how I'm going to think of observer space, is as the subspace of S31 crust H4. And then we have the inertial observer space, which is just the space of all the time-like TUD6. And obviously there's one of those that goes through any particular time-like tangent vector that I start out with. So if you're interested in relating things that happen on the conformal boundary of the Sitter space and the Sitter space itself, and one frustrating thing is that there's no map that takes you from the boundary to the Sitter space or vice versa. No nice map in any case. In particular, there's not a map that respects all of the symmetries. You can't write an SO41 equivariant map from the boundary into the bulk, for example. But, of course, functions are just one kind of relation that you can have between spaces. And much more general relations are given by pairs of functions, which are drawn here at the bottom. So there's this span, the observer space sitting over the Sitter space time and the conformal three sphere. And in fact, that's sort of the smallest, it's the universal relation that you can have between the boundary and the bulk of the Sitter space. So that's one way to think of what observer space is. All that really means is that the stabilizer subgroup in each of those two spaces at the bottom, if you take both of those stabilizers and you take their intersection, it's exactly the stabilizer SO3 of observer space. Okay, so the map on the left is the obvious one. It's the map that takes us from a tangent vector down to the point that tangent vector is based at. What is the map on the other side? How do I map from observer space down to conformal three sphere? And that's indicated with the pictures on page 9. So I start off with some tangent vector to the Sitter space time. And take the inertial observer that corresponds to that. I take the GV6 through that tangent vector. That GV6 is contained in a unique plane, two-dimensional plane through the origin of the ambient space. That's the left picture there. But then forget about the Sitter space and go over to the right-hand picture. The same plane intersects also the light cone, and it does it, in fact, in two lines. So this determines actually two different points of the conformal three sphere. One of those points in the conformal three sphere is a light ray that approaches the original GV6 in the asymptotic past, and one approaches it in the asymptotic future. So I get two different maps, SO41 equivariant maps actually from the observer space of the Sitter space time down to conformal space. So I'm an observer, has a particular favorite point in the conformal boundary, you can think of it as, or in case in the conformal truth sphere. So on page 10, see that you can continue this story, and you get a bunch of different SO41 spaces and maps that respect all of the symmetries, and I've written what all of the corresponding stabilizer groups are. So from observer space, you get as a quotient all of these other spaces, space-time and hyperbolic space, and either of the ambient light cones. the inertial observer space and conformal tree sphere. You get all of those as quotients just by modding out by subgroups that are contained at those three, modding the observer space out by bigger subgroups. So that's all fine and dandy, but on page 11, suppose we don't start out with space. Now I want to think about how I can go in the other direction. I hope the first direction is clear, how I get from an observer in the sort of space-time down to some point in conformal space. But if I don't have space-time to start out, then can I reconstruct the observer space? How can I reconstruct the observer space just starting out with the geometry of the conformal sphere and only saying things that would make sense to conformal geometers and never talking about space-time at all? And then the more important question is, can we rephrase this in a way that lets us generalize it to other conformal geometries and get a theory of, hopefully a theory of dynamical conformal geometry that will nonetheless give us all of the things that we can say about observers in the same way that we would say that we would in the space-time world. So let's start doing that. And as a first step on page 12, we should think about what the pre-image is of that map that I just described. So I know how to get from an observer down to the conformal tree sphere. First of all, what does the fiber over a specific point look like? What are all of the observers that map down to the same point in the sitter space, in the conformal tree sphere? And the answer is an easy calculation, but I'll just give you one interesting thing about the result. The result is that it's all of the observers who share the same path cosmological horizon. So that red line that you can see in the picture, hopefully, is the line that I drew three pages before on page 9. Go back to page 9 just briefly on the right-hand side. We've got the red line that represents the asymptotic path of a particular observer. So now back forward to page 12 again. It's the same red line, and now I've gotten rid of that other plane, and the plane that I've drawn is the orthogonal complement of that light-like line. And that orthogonal complement is a four plane that intersects the sitter space-time along the cosmological horizon, the past cosmological horizon. And I've drawn in all of the trajectories of all of the observers that map down to that particular point in the conformal tree sphere. And so this gives us an entire field of observers corresponding to just one point in the conformal tree sphere. So let's go to the next slide, number 13.
So for most relatively people, right, it would be much easier to understand it in terms of scratch. So you're just saying that you look at scratch plus of the sitter and look at the point on the tree sphere, which is a conformal, it's only a conformal structure because it is a conformal completion, and just look at the light path light cone. And then that uses the cosmological horizon of a bunch of observers. Is that correct, or am I missing something?
I think that's correct, modulo the things that I didn't hear because of sound problems. So, yeah, actually, can you...
Yeah, so when you speak of even the mapping, right, from the observer space to the conformal tree sphere, isn't that just, you take the geodesic intersection space-time and go to Scratchlus, and that happens in the tree sphere. So that is the mapping that you're looking at. And the horizon that you're drawing up here is really look at a point of Scratchlus then look at, you know, the spotlight cone, and that is the horizon, and all geodesics, time-like geodesics, which converge to that point, are in the clouds that you're looking at. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds great. And the way to
do it. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so we have this theorem on page 13, which is that if you know where you came from and you know where you're going, then you know who you are. So I want to just pick out, not just, I don't want to just know what this fiber is, what this pre-image is. I want to be able to pick out one specific observer in this field of observers. And the theorem says that if I know what the asymptotic past of my observer is, and I know what the asymptotic future is, these are just 2 points. See, I'm identifying the future and past boundaries here because I'm just using the model of the conformal trees here as the projective light cone in the ambient space. So both of those are just points in the conformal trees here. So if I know both of those, then I know the observer except for the time scale. I know the inertial observer. But then the second theorem, which seems to be also true, is that the more you can see the past, the older you are. And what does that mean? Well, I guess it's actually sort of what Fire was just saying. If I take the light cone at a particular position along the, take the light cone in the de Sitter space-time at a particular position along the observer's world line, and I extend that back all the way to the asymptotic past, that gives me a circle in the conformal three sphere. That's how much of the asymptotic past is causally connected to me now, as opposed to some other time along my world line. So this means, if you look on page 14, that we get a picture of an observer in conformal geometry that looks like this. I just need to know 2 points, the asymptotic past and the asymptotic future of that observer, plus I need to pick out one of those copies of S2 that interpolates between them. So my time is that family of S2s that's expanding out from the origin to infinity. And, yeah, of course, the conformal compactification of R3 is just the conformal three-sphere, which is isomorphic to the specific conformal three-sphere that we've been talking about, which is the projective light cone. But conversely, if I do this construction here, I choose the origin and infinity and a unit sphere, that's enough to turn the complement of infinity into a Euclidean vector space, and think of it again as R3. So we could call an observer here we call this reverse process the Euclidean decompactification. And then an observer is just a Euclidean decompactification of the conformal three sphere. So, right. Page 15, we have this theorem then. There's a canonical and SO41 equivariant isomorphism between observers in the De Sitter spacetime and these Euclidean decompactifications of the conformal three spheres. Okay. Page 16. So the thing that I like about this kind of manipulation, it's a fun game that you can appreciate independent of whether you care about the physics applications or not. But the neat thing is that I can tell two completely different sounding stories about the geometry, and secretly I'm still talking about the same thing. So there's a space-time picture where all of these spaces have names that, that are determined by space-time. So for example, I start out in this pink box on the left. That's space-time, but I can build the observer space of the
the unit future tangent bundle, and I can take various quotients of that to get to the past boundary, to the space of inertial observers, the space of surfaces of simultaneity is H4, C minus, it's just a bit harder to say exactly what it is in intrinsic space-time terms. But there's also this other side of the story, which sounds completely different. You start off with the conformal free sphere, you don't know anything about space-time, you can build this space of conformal decompactification, you can build space of two spheres with a co-orientation, and that turns out to be the what we would think of as space-time from a space-time perspective. And these two pictures are not just isomorphic, but they're isomorphic in a way that respects all of the symmetries and in a canonical way, as long as I embed my spaces the way that I did at the beginning of the talk. So, a problem though, on page 17, if we want to do actual